Okay, we can move towards the next part of this mindfulness for young adult session. So that is a Dhamma sermon based on Uraga Sutta. So as you know, Uraga Sutta is the very first sutta of Sutta Nipata. Sutta Nipata being one of the ancient books, belongs to Kuddaka Nikaya and giving a very interesting account of various suttas uttered by the Buddha. Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta, say Kagga Visana Sutta. So likewise, very interesting suttas are there, and certain ones are deeply philosophical and talking about Buddha's teaching deeply. And again, this sutta is actually giving us a very interesting phenomena which is common to all serpents. You all have seen that how a particular serpent again and again shedding off its worn out skin. Time to time it's doing that. So Buddha is using this analogy to explain us certain Dhamma facts. So in Vipassana meditation and in our spiritual growth, there are certain times that we have to let go of various defilements and maybe various acquisitions, various identifications which we used to hold, which we used to say attached. But with the understanding, people may understand, okay, it is not necessary to hold, not necessary to say grasp. As a result of that, they are quite ready to let it go, to leave it aside. And so in this particular verse, so Buddha is explaining how one may let go of anger. Yo nachasari na pachasari sabbang vitatamidanti vita doso. So bhikkhu jahati ora parang urago jinnamiva tacham puranam. One who has neither run too far nor run back, devoid of hatred, knowing all this is unreal, that bhikkhu gives up the here and the beyond as a serpent sheds its old worn out skin. Now the last two sentences, or the sentences available in this verse, are quite common to each and every verse. And as a serpent is shedding off the worn out skin, so one has to let go of anger. Nowadays actually you can see many people are angry. All are developing hatred. Maybe if you look at the country situation, Sri Lanka, so most of people are in a very frustrated situation, easily get angry, easily get annoyed. They are hurting each other, blaming each other, killing each other. So it's a very vulnerable situation. But in this verse, Buddha asks us, and how to, in a way, let go this anger, arisen anger. And not only in this verse, actually, there are various other verses available throughout the canon. So Buddha highlights this situation. For example, I found two verses coming in Dhammapada. Yo ve upatitam kodham ratham bhantam dharaye tamaham sarathim bhumi tasmiggaho itara jano. Very interesting analogy. Here also Buddha mentioned. Now, you know, when you are driving, suppose during the old time, people were using horse carts, and you have the reins so that you can hold and you can properly drive the horses. And sometimes horses may run on wrong track or may on wrong side. At that time, so the charioteer has to be fully vigilant. He has to be very mindful, and he should be very aware that what's really going to happen. Accordingly, he has to put them in the correct track. If horses are driving in the wrong track, if they are leaning onto one side, or one horse, assume that the cart has several horses, maybe four horses. If two are running too fast and another two are little sluggish, then the whole cart is not in well balance. So the charioteer has to look after it. So similarly, if they are taking a bend, so it has to be properly balanced. And again, when you are driving in a deep or kind of a steep slope, probably you have to handle it properly. So similarly, the charioteer has to have this kind of a very skillful attitude. And whenever the cart going into the wrong track or wrong side, then he have to immediately intervene and put it in the correct track, properly balance it. Similarly, Buddha mentioned, like a charioteer properly balancing, properly taking all horses, the chariot to the proper tracking, so whenever you understand that mind has gone into the wrong track, that is, mind has become agitated, mind has become frustrated, mind has become angry, then you have to intervene, then you have to put it into the correct track, without allowing the mind to get burned by anger. So actually, in order to do that, you need to have a fair amount of mindfulness. Because otherwise, you may get into anger and you may react immediately and you may get into arguments and you may even quarrel with others. And maybe after a couple of days, probably you may be regretting, thinking that you were too short-tempered and you were taken the wrong side or misunderstood the situation, you couldn't take control of yourself, you acted too quickly, probably you being provocated. So all regretting thoughts may happen in your mind. Then it is too late actually. But when you develop mindfulness, slowly you are aware of this kind of emotions when available in your mind. Say you are angry, true, but you can be aware of it. Still, probably the power of anger is too strong. Probably you may still maybe blame or something like that can happen, but still fully aware. Later, as you develop further, you don't need to come to that level. You still may little burn through anger, but now you are not getting to any action. You can control yourself. You can apply brake. You know now mind is little angry, frustrated. You don't accept the situation, that some problem is there, but still you can manage yourself. You are not getting into arguments. You are not getting into quarrel. That indicates some development. Maybe as you further develop, you can even recognize the very first thought of anger. So this is where the gradual development of mindfulness is quite important. Just actually not only mindfulness, as you are developing mindfulness, some clarity of mind happens. And you have some clear comprehension, each and every thought you can precisely recognize. So that kind of ability is being developed. On such situation, actually you can even notice how the very first thought of anger, very first thought of frustration is going to happen. Then without getting deluded by that, or without being driven by that, you can step out. You can let it go. Like as mentioned in this Dhammapada verse, so you now notice, okay, the chariot is now going into the wrong track. It's about to get angry. Mind is about to get angry. So you give a kind of a warning to yourself. Don't go in this track. It may be true that you are correct and the other party may be wrong. But right now, better avoid getting angry. You understand, okay, it is harmful to myself, it is harmful to the other party, and whatever you develop would be being damaged if you get angry, and whatever the reputation you already gained could be damaged if you behave in a harsh manner. So likewise, various consequences also you can understand. And most importantly, you can understand when anger has overpowered yourself, how you are behaving. All your good qualities are being hindered, and now you are kind of slave to an anger. So you can foresee all these kind of consequences, all these disadvantages, all these dangers of anger. As a result of that, now you are trying to protect yourself, not getting angry. There are enough situations, particularly today, for you to get angry. If you consider Sri Lanka, there are many, enough reasons for you to get angry, for you to get frustrated. But how to minimize it? How to protect ourselves? How to protect our mind? Now, if you look at the world situation, still there are so much reasons for us to get even depressed, even get frustrated. Many uncertainties, So easily people get short tempered on this situation. So like as a practitioner, then how are you guarding yourself? So these are quite interesting things that we can discuss today. So that's why Buddha mentioned you have to be on guard. You have to be quite alert. When you are driving your vehicle, you have to be fully alert. If you fall asleep, then probably your vehicle may meet with an accident. But you have to be fully vigilant when you are driving. So if it is going to the wrong, say it is cutting to a wrong side, then you have to interact. You have to intervene the situation and you have to put it to the proper track. Similarly, you have to guard the mind, you have to observe the mind. And if it is going to the wrong track, onto the habitual tendency, then you have to slowly take it back and make the mind again peaceful. And there's another verse coming in the Dhammapada. Kaya pakopang rakkeya kayena sangutosya. Kaya duccharitang hitva kayena sucharitang chare. Now, when you understand, okay, if you get angry, your body also become really charged. Then you are going to quarrel. You are getting a gun or whatever it is. Now, that is kaya pakopa. So you very much like get anger transmitted towards the body. And through the body, now you are doing some bodily activity. It is quite harmful to yourself and harmful to another person. Some similar verse is mentioned to words as well. Vachipakopang rakkeya vachaya sangutosya. So you have to recognize, are you uttering something or telling something with anger? That means you have to look at when you are doing something, are you doing it as a result of anger? You're being provocated through anger. Is it that is the reason that you are doing it through the body? Or if you are telling something, you have to look and see whether you are telling it because of anger. Maybe you are blaming, you are criticizing, you are arguing. Is it because of anger? And similarly, the mind also get provocated. Mind also become really charged. Now again and again, so much of thoughts are happening. All are promoting anger. Now that is one characteristic available in our mind. So when you start thinking more and more angry thoughts, then many thoughts of anger going to happen. Then you don't need to purposely think. Mind itself will pick or choose so many other things which makes yourself further angry. Ultimately, you are caught. You are very much like a victim of this whole vicious cycle. And sometimes people don't practice the loving kindness. They don't practice compassion. And they sometimes think or they underestimate the value of them. So this is also something that we need to look at. Because if you consider Buddha's character, he has kind of both sides, Mahapanya and Mahakaruna. So he is not only a wise person, he is also a compassionate person. So his wisdom and compassion are both well balanced. If we have too much compassion without, wisdom, probably then we may forget about our own welfare, our own well-being, and we may be doing something more emotionally. On the other hand, if you don't have any loving kindness, any compassion, then you may be become kind of a quite selfish, cunning person. So these qualities in that sense have to be properly balanced. So when you are doing even vipassana, so that's why Buddha sometimes tell us, okay, if you recognize your mind has become so dry, apply a little bit of lubricant. So what is the lubricant? Maybe Buddha Anusati, maybe Metta, maybe compassion. But don't overdose. So if you apply too much of loving kindness or too much of compassion, then you may forget about your own welfare. So time to time, having proper balance is one attribute of the practice. So that's why in certain suttas, Buddha mentioned about panidhaya bhavana and apanidhaya bhavana. particularly when you are practicing mindfulness, say satipatthana, it is called apanidhaya bhavana. Yeah, you don't have any kind of a desire. So more you are trying to be with the reality. You are experiencing something directly. You are observing, investigating it. But sometimes this investigation can make the mind little dry. At that moment, Buddha asks us to switch to panidhaya bhavana. What are the panidhaya bhavana? That is something which is makes you quite happy and you feel quite smooth, calm, quiet, tranquil, happy. Maybe you can take a little bit of loving kindness. If you are quite a faithful character, maybe you can think of Buddha's qualities. It's kind of calming down yourself, soothing your mind. Then your mind is well balanced. Then when you are in that equilibrium, then again you can restart vipassana. So likewise, we need to recognize as we are moving forward, what is the state of the mind? Is it well balanced? Or is it biased towards something? Sometimes people are practicing vipassana, but they can't simply be with their family members. Maybe they can't be with their co-workers, finding too many faults. Maybe, say, blaming and criticizing, because this is some kind of a, say, byproduct. It could be a byproduct of your practice. Because you know, for example, if you are merely practicing Dhatu Manasikara, the elements meditation, it is something that very precisely you are trying to recognize element characteristics. So it is promoting more precise recognition of subtle aspects. But when you are developing this, actually not only within the physical body that you see subtle characteristics, when you are dealing with another person, you can easily see his or her faults. Maybe you now start criticizing, you start arguing, and you easily get angry. So because that you are developing one part of the meditation, which is promoting more kind of critical thinking, critical analysis. At that moment, you need to recognize, okay, a little bit of imbalance is there. I need to continue my, say, family life. I need to continue my job. I need to be with the other social members. So how to balance? So that respect, therefore, sometimes we need to understand, okay, if vipassana meditation is taking you to one extreme, then we need to a little bit balance it. Better take a little bit of time, not be in a hurry. Don't allow the mind to be dried up. Rather, apply a little bit of faith, saddha. Apply a little bit of patience, acceptance, forgiveness, compassion, loving kindness. Now, these are the other sides which helps the mind to become again calm, quiet, accepting, forgiving. So then you can be with the others as well. So that's why if you consider Buddha's character, he had both sides. So he is quite capable. He has all the wisdom. At the same time, he has all the compassion. That's why he being the world teacher, he can even go to Sopaka. Sopaka is in the cemetery. So he's a very, poor child. But Buddha, being the world teacher, renowned teacher, the early morning he is going to the cemetery just to safeguard Sopaka. And sometimes Buddha is going on alms round and he see a kind of a old woman definitely going to die today. So he see that this is a low caste woman and she's going to die today and there is no merit power at all. She'll definitely will be reborn in the hell realm. So Buddha had kind of a compassion and he is actually going along with Venerable Moggallana. And while closer to her, Buddha stopped. And then Venerable Moggallana want to see why Buddha has stopped. And then he recognized, okay, Buddha has a kind of a compassion towards this old woman. And he understood that this woman doesn't have any merit power and quite miserable. So Buddha has some compassion towards her. So Venerable Mahamoggallana go and invite or inform this particular woman that you go and pay respect to Buddha. He's the world teacher, renowned teacher. Out of compassion, he has come in front of you. So this woman understood that and she paid respect to Buddha. And after a while, she passed away. But that very joyful activity, meritorious deed, really helped her to be reborn in a celestial realm. So similarly, Buddha had all these different occasions. He has given a lot of philosophical sermons, maybe really wise sermons, extremely deep sermons. But at the same time, he has talked about the Brahma Vihara. So Brahma Vihara meditation, say loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, and equanimity. Now, if you consider altruistic joy, so how to be happy when someone else is growing? By seeing someone else's prosperity, how one can be happy? Now, if you consider your own growth, your own happiness, so very less possibility that we can be happy, because we can't say that every day I am growing. Every day there are reasons to be happy, if you consider your own character. But if you consider many others, say your children, your husband, your wife, your family members, or any others, or maybe your friends, maybe every day they have something to be happy. But on the other hand, say many people if you have, even neighbors, maybe villagers, someone who is doing good. So if you can be happy by seeing someone else's success, then there are many reasons for you to be happy. So nowadays actually we have less reasons to be happy. So now we need to find out what are the reasons, how can I become glad, reasons to be glad. So actually I can remember Bhante Dhammajiva is mentioning about the book Pollyanna. So that little girl is finding various reasons to be happy, to be glad. So likewise, we also have to find out what are the reasons to be glad. So when you get up, when you wake up, is there a reason to be glad? So you are born, I mean you are alive, you are not dead. A reason to be glad. Okay, you can breathe freely. A reason to be glad, and probably you can hear birds chirping. Very interesting. Maybe you can hear family members are talking. A reason to be glad. See, if you consider a person who is in a hospital, so he is away from the family members, he has missed this opportunity. So you are still at home, you are with your family members, you have a reason to be glad. And assume that when you are opening your fridge, there are something to eat. A reason to be glad. Say if you have a job, a reason to be glad. There are many people who are jobless. And if you go to a fuel station, if you are able to buy fuel, a reason to be glad. Because many people are on the queue for several days without fuel. So these are many reasons that we can think. If we think only the wrong side or the mistakes or the faults, shortcomings, then every day we are quite unhappy, unsatisfied. But on the other hand, if we have little things to make ourselves happy, then it is very less chances to get angry. Even there are reasons to be angry, but now we are looking from a different perspective, different angle. So when others are talking what they don't have, you are thinking what you have. It is not that many things you need to have to be happy. But little things, maybe you have some time to practice. You did your morning session, you had a morning walk, you pay respect to the Buddha, you offered little flowers to the Buddha, a reason to be happy. Maybe you pay respect to your parents, a reason to be happy. Maybe you listen to a little bit of music, a reason to be happy. So likewise, so we need to protect our mind. We have to safeguard our mind. Nowadays, we all are going through some hectic situations. So especially these days, we have to protect our mind, guard our mind. Without watching too much, what you call the news. Without agitating the mind. Without getting on to too much political discussions. Safeguarding our mind. Recognizing that we are trying to protect the mind, we are trying to develop the mind, continuing the peace of mind, so that not allowing the mind to get agitated. And deeply, when we consider that many, many situations is not just the bodily feeling or bodily pain or the real situation aggravates the situation. Rather, we add so much of our own stuff to the picture. Say, for example, if you have a wound in your leg, so it may generate a little bit of pain. But the additional pain happens because of your own mental constructions. It's a kind of a psychological pain, psychological feeling, psychological suffering that we are adding to the picture. So that is the real suffering. The body pain was there even to Arahants, even to the Buddha. But they didn't suffer. Because they didn't add that psychological component. Even a little thing if you have, and if you are adding so much of psychological suffering onto it, then you are suffering a lot. But how to minimize that? How to keep the bodily pain just to the bodily pain without adding psychological pain onto it? So this is something that we need to understand. This is something that we need to investigate. Whenever you feel some frustrated, you feel agitation, you feel suffering, you better step back and see, why am I really suffering? Is it due to the body pain? Is it due to the country situation? Is it due to the real world situation? Or am I expecting something more? Or am I adding my own judgments? So if you can stop that, if you can keep your mind quiet, probably there may be little frustration, there may be little pain, but just that. Not adding, not constructing, not preparing, not fabricating, not aggravating. So those are little things actually we can understand. So Buddha here mentioned, so more you go deeply, you may understand a lot of suffering is self-created. A lot of suffering is very much like we constructed, unnecessarily constructed. So by understanding that, now slowly you are very much like detached from the situation, detached from the incident. You can simply be an outsider and watch the situation and endure the situation, cope up the situation. So nowadays, therefore, we need to develop this kind of attitude, a situation to cope up, be more patient. So patience become the best enduring or the best austere practice. Kanti paraman tapoti dikha. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
We have 6 questions today.
Yeah.
First question, it's on mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, much merits for this valuable program. Thanks to your practical guidance, I started being vigilant on my thoughts and behavior of my mind often. I also try to find time as I can to do sitting and walking practice, which is not that successful. My question is around being mindful on negative thoughts and my inability to stop them or getting carried away by them. What happens now is I know that I am tangled and knowingly I get flushed away. This is even painful than being completely ignorant and stupid. Bhante says that this will get sorted eventually, But looking at my own sins, chains and kelas makes me nervous and depressed about myself every day. With metta. That's the end of the question.
I think this is a common question today and nowadays. That's why we need to promote some positive signs, positive aspects. So many negative reasons, negative situations are available. But that's why we need to recognize what are the things to be glad. What are the reasons to be glad? So that positive side we have to purposely develop these days. So therefore, try to look at what are the reasons to be glad, what are the little things you have, what are the skills you already have. At least you know that you have some defilements, but people don't know that thing. So they are simply victims of defilements. But you at least know this is a defilement. So that is a good understanding. But most vast majority of people, they don't know that. Simply they are immediately become victim of defilement and they simply act according to the defilement. But you are in a better position. You know it is a defilement, true, but still I couldn't stop it, but you knowingly going through it. So this is the first step, understanding all on our own shortcomings. Now you understand the gravity of it. Then you are looking at the solution. That's why you are asking, what is the solution? So that is a good indication that now you are exploring yourself. Now you want to become further good. So your mindfulness is showing all the different shortcomings you have. Previously we didn't know that. Simply we went through the whole situation and we are like victims, slaves. But now we are trying to minimize that. We are trying to be free from these defilements. So that is a good attitude. So therefore think positively. So as we discuss, I mean, these things not happen immediately. We have to have a fair amount of patience. We have to continue the practice for a long time. Then slowly they may fade away. And at least actually you may understand, okay, previously I had strong desires or strong emotions, quite short-tempered. Maybe with time, probably you may understand, okay, I can at least bear things now. I can apply brakes. I can little restrain myself. A reason to be glad. I mean, you are in the practice and you can develop, you already developed a little bit of mindfulness maybe. A little bit of tranquility you are experiencing. So likewise, these little improvements you can appreciate, you can applaud. And as a result of that, now you are continuing. So just maintain some patience. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 6. This is on mindful walking. Dear Venerable Sir, what is the characteristics and key indicators for identifying this is mindfulness and this is concentration during the initial period of walking and sitting practice? How can you explain to a novice the path of improvements or signposts of improvement in mindfulness and concentration? Venerable Sir always talks about mixing and matching them. Does this come after the initial period where one can successfully sustain mindfulness for at least 30 to 40 minutes? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, mindfulness at the beginning we can simply say as bear attention. Yeah, you are keeping your attention in the present moment. So typically we are very much like bewildered, completely entangled. Never living in the present moment, unless it is a quite tragic situation. Most of the time, mind is wandering and living in a different world, illusions, like that. But mindfulness helps us to bring our attention to the present moment. Okay, now I am living, now I am sitting, now I am walking, now I am breathing. Likewise, that is the very much taking your mind to the present moment. But again and again when you are doing it, now mind is capable of being with the particular object for a long time. Say if you are watching breath, at the beginning you could watch only 5 breaths. Maybe later 20 breaths. Maybe 50 breaths. So that means, so mind has some amount of ekagata, some amount of concentration. Now you can maintain it. Your attention can maintain for a considerable period of time on a selected object. So that is an attribute of concentration. Actually, concentration or the attribute of ekagata is completely opposite to kamachanda. So when our mind is overpowered or overwhelmed by sensual desire, it's jumping from one object to the other object. But on the other hand, when you are able to say let go of kamachanda or subside kamachanda, then mind can retain on the same object for longer time, whatever the selected object. That is the ekagata, that is the concentration, one-pointedness of the mind. So while you are maintaining that, now you can be mindful plus concentrated, well focused. So these are little bit, I mean, they are going hand in hand. You can't immediately develop concentration. Rather, you can start with mindfulness. As you develop mindfulness, as a result of that, kind of a byproduct, you get the concentration. Now it is very much like coupled. You are mindful. At the same time, your mind does not shift. Rather, it stays on a desired object, selected object. Then we can say, okay, mindfulness and concentration is available. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 6 is a general question. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing with this program for the last 2 years and thank you so much for your valuable service. Even though I'm satisfied with my walking and sitting practice of one hour each, at least a few times a week, my mind started getting polluted recently with karma vitakka. I can observe these thoughts quite clearly, but I cannot discard them. Should I use kayagata sati techniques to move my focus away from these moments and be mindful on my body posture, or learn asubha practice to directly confront them? Which one is more result-oriented? Much merit for your advice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, as you mentioned, the first option, that is using the kayagata sati or using the body awareness, is more useful when you are confronting the desire. So you have developed, if you already have developed a fair amount of mindfulness, then you don't need to go to asubha bhavana. Rather, you can confront when lust is available, you recognize lust as lust. And usually what happens is lust has a little bit of enjoyment. So therefore we don't need to discard lustful thought immediately, because we are being trapped or tempted by that enjoyment. So that's why Buddha mentioned lust or raga is something difficult to remove because of this enjoyment. It has kind of a, what you call the... there's an interesting term in Buddha, in the teaching, asada, kind of a delight is there. But when you are more restrained, your mind is more attuned towards having kind of a niramisa piti, not going through sensual desires, how to have kind of a niramisa piti. Your attitude has changed now. You are not trying to be happy through the sensual desires, sensual sense gratification, but you are more focused on maintaining a mind free from defilements, a peaceful mind. So if you are able to achieve that, then definitely we don't need to go for asubha bhavana. Rather, we can apply all different vipassana techniques to confront lust. But on the other hand, suppose still we are not developed to that level, or sometimes even though we have practiced vipassana, still sometimes we get quite lustful and lust is now growing. At that moment, actually, you can no harm in using asubha bhavana. You can look at the lost sumness of the body, and you can try to recover the mind. So therefore, I mean, these things are like tools. So depending on the situation, we can apply different tools.
Question number 4 of 6. This is a Dhamma Saman question. Dear Bhante, if we want to protect our minds from anger, what do we do when we need to get angry? For example, if we want to wake up a child to go to school, they won't listen unless we shout or sound angry. Our intention is good, but the action is not. How do we approach this situation? Thank you for your valuable time and feedback. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, Buddha also has done the same thing. So it is not that every time Buddha has used the mild words. So Buddha also has used harsh words. Actually, there's an interesting story between a kind of a discussion between Buddha and a horse tamer. So this horse tamer's name is called Casey. And when Casey came to see the Buddha, and Buddha asked a certain question. Actually, he asked how you are taming horses. And then Casey mentioned, okay, certain horses are quite easy to tame. So I am using smooth words to tame them, because they are catching horses from the wild and they are a wild horse. Now this particular person has to tame the wild horse. On certain horses, he is using smooth or say soft words, and easily they are tamed. And certain others, he mentioned that they can't. I mean, he has to use harsh words, harsh methods. Using harsh methods, he is taming those horses. And certain others, he has to use both. Harsh words plus soft words. Using both, he is taming them. And others, what he is going to do, because he is a well-reputed horse tamer, and others he can't tame by both techniques. Using smooth or soft techniques or the harsh techniques, he can't tame. And to protect his reputation, he is killing them. And now he is asking how you are protecting or how you are taming monks. And Buddha mentioned, I also apply the same technique. I sometimes use soft words. Then I can tame certain monks. Certain times I am using harsh words. Then I can tame them. Sometimes I am using both soft words plus harsh words. Then I am taming them. Others I am killing. Then Casey was a little puzzled and he is telling, Bhante, I heard that you are not doing any panaghata. You are free from panatipata. Then he is asking, I mean, are you really killing them? Then Buddha said, killing means here I am completely neglecting them. I am no more advise them. I understood that they are beyond my advocation. I am no more advising them. It is a killing of this sasana. So if Buddha understood, okay, a particular monk is untamable, so it's a great loss to that monk. So that is a kind of a killing. So that's why Buddha mentioned here. For certain monks, I am using soft techniques and harsh techniques, but still I understood that he is untamable. I simply neglect them. So likewise, so therefore certain times Buddha also has used harsh words, but you know, he internally is pure. So therefore it is kind of an application of the technique. So you as a parent, you have great compassion towards your children, but sometimes you have to apply harsh techniques. So no harm, otherwise, I mean, you can't tame them. So I mean, it's a kind of a practical value here we have to mention. It is not that you are having kind of a grudge towards your child. Rather, you want to tame him. You need to wake him up. So, a little bit of shout may help.
Question number 5 of 6. This is a Dhamma sermon question again. Dear Bhante, regarding today's Dhamma sermon on Panidya Bhavana, what is the best method to switch to loving kindness if you are feeling getting agitated all the time? Should we stop the mindfulness vipassana practice for a few weeks and focus on the loving kindness technique, or mix it with regular sitting and walking practice? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, if you can mix, I think that is much better. Because if you altogether stop mindfulness practice, say walking and sitting, then because you know that, assume that you went through mindfulness practice, you are observing maybe rising and falling or breathing or say feelings or thoughts or whatever it is. So that has gathered fair amount of mindfulness and wisdom. And if you completely stop that for a while, then that understanding may a little bit of decay. Because the loving kindness meditation is somewhat based on the conventional things. Say you first of all have some loving thoughts towards yourself, maybe towards another person, a respectable person, and then to all the beings. So likewise, still it is based on the conventional reality, conventions. So it has to be a little bit of balance. So Therefore, if you can couple it together, then that is much better.
Question number 6, this is the last one. It's a general question. Dear Bhante, I have in recent times used the practice of focusing on my breath to get away from issues or problems in my life. It really calms me down and clears my mind. I sometimes do that in the middle of a conversation with someone when I do not want to get involved with the conversation and if it is giving me negative thoughts. I use this as an escapism. Is that the correct method to use the practice? I feel like I am cheating. Please advise. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. I mean, this is good rather than you getting angry. Because at the beginning, as we discussed already, sometimes we can't immediately confront these angry thoughts. So then one option is to put ourselves back to the body. So you are observing your breath or you are observing various sensations available in the body. So when you are focusing more attention onto them, then slowly all these angry thoughts may disappear. But as you also predicted, but in the future we have to confront, because these are merely thoughts. So at the moment I'm not capable, I'm not yet strong enough to handle them. But later in the future, slowly as we develop further mindfulness and wisdom, then you can confront. Then you don't need to put your attention back to the body. When angry thought arise, you can simply be with it. You can observe it. Because then your own mindfulness and wisdom is quite stronger. This angry thought can't overpower you. That you may understand. So at the very moment that you are mindful, so it's a kind of you are building a dam or blockage. You are putting a blockage or applying brake to this flow of angry thoughts. How they stop. And then probably by applying various other techniques, probably you can heal the mind. Maybe you can look at how these angry thoughts are popping up, how mind is trying to tempt you, how mind is trying to look at various other options available, other incidents available to further add to this picture. Then you can understand how mind is constructing this situation. As we discussed already, situation may be available, but you are aggravating the situation. You are adding more stuff to the situation. So if you can look at this constructing part, weaving more and more thoughts into the picture, that you may understand, okay, it is not entirely necessary. I can stop at this little bit of uneasiness at that level without adding my own stuff to the picture. So in order to do that, probably we need to look at anger as it is. Without, diverting your attention to the body, at that moment we are, capable of looking at anger as it is and confronting it. It's not a kind of a battle that you need to have with the anger. Rather, you have your kind of, self-confidence, develop mindfulness, wisdom, and you are quite capable of handling it. You can even look at the very first thought of that anger, very first thought of that frustration, little bit of resistance. And when you are able to look at it, then slowly they will fade away. So therefore, I mean, for the moment, if you feel not confident, then you can certainly maybe watch the breath or look at sensations or whatever it is. You can apply such technique, no problem. But later, slowly, you can experiment whether I can handle it, whether I can observe it directly. So that would be the best way. So that's why Buddha mentioned Anyaya Diswa Diswa Pahatabba. Doso Bhikkave Na Kayena Pahatabbo Na Vachaya Panyaya Diswa Diswa Pahatabba. Buddha mentioned whatever the hatred we have, you can't simply remove it from the body. You can't simply remove it through words. But whenever anger available in the mind, hatred available in the mind, you have to look at it as it is. This is anger. This is hatred. This is how it is. And more you look at it closely, and you are very much like disengaged observer. You are observing it as an object. And slowly then it will lose its strength and it will decay and pass away. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. So that we have come to the end of the questions today. So because Bhante is in Kalalgoda, we will end the program today a little bit early. So to end the program, I would like to first thank Bhante for his valuable time and answering all our questions, and also thank the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and also to the participants for joining the program today. So with that, I would like to conclude the program. Theruvan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Theruvan Saranai.